Okay. Good. Hello, everyone. So after this very nice excursion in MHC3, we're going to come back in our own neighborhood, and I want to talk about our work on the X-ray properties of supernova remnants in the Magellanic Cloud. So this was done with our collaborators here. Many of them are in the audience. So in this talk, I'm going to start by just giving the rationale for this study, then present the XMM Newton data sets that were used. And then I'll present all the results for the SNR of the larger Magellanic Cloud, before extending this work to the small Magellanic Cloud and also talking about the local group galaxies. And in the last part, I want to focus on some of the old type 1A supernova remnants in the large Magellanic Clouds. So we've heard on the first day already that, and during this conference, that although the galaxy is ideal for individual studies of the iconic objects, it's not suited really for population studies because of the large distance uncertainties, and the line of sight confusion, and it's more importantly the high absorption that is commonly found toward galactic objects. On the in contrast to this, the LMC and SMC are the nearest star-forming galaxies, at well-known distances, out of the galactic plane, and viewed at favorable viewing angles. And the dramatic effect of the resulting lower absorption is illustrated here on this example spectrum. So in red, you have the absorption commonly found towards the LMC, which is much milder than the one that is, can be found easily in the galactic plane. And so you retain most of the flux in the soft X-rays, and there you have important lines from oxygen, neon, and iron. So we can use this to our advantage and perform X-ray analysis of the and get the X-ray properties of a lot of SNRs in the Magellanic Clouds. So here is the LMC shown in optical lines, and it spans at least 8 degrees on the sky, which is very large compared to the field of view of the X-ray observatories that we have out, at our disposal. So the challenge is to find to make a lot of observations to cover the galaxies. And here, each circle is an existing XMM observation toward the LMC. And we have more than 100 observations that are almost 3 megaseconds of data. And the mosaic of red circle is our very large program that aims at an homogeneous coverage of the central region of the cloud. So if you take all this data and then you analyze them, you make mosaic images, you run source detection, and then you can analyze your source. And you can have this stunning view of the LMC in X-rays here on the right. So you have, also, again, diffuse emission, which is the hot gas that glows in X-rays. And for comparison, I show the ROSAT view of the LMC. So this is an improvement in every way. We detected 10 times more point sources. We have a sharper and deeper view of the diffuse emission. And more importantly, for the topic today, you can do spatial and spectral analysis for many SNRs. So by our own conservative counts, we have now 59 confirmed supernova remnants in the LMC, and 51 have been covered by XMM, and some of them for the first time. In total, we added 12 new SNRs to the sample of Magellanic SNRs, either by targeting supernova remnant candidates, or they were also found serendipitously in our survey. And so these new sources are listed here. And we publish multi-wavelength analysis for all of them in the paper as listed here. And so this work has been very useful to build a complete sample of SNRs, or at least a good sample of SNRs. Here I just show the evolution of the number of LMC SNRs that were known as function of time. So we have the first discovery in the 60s and 70s, and then you have the first Einstein. The first X-ray survey with Einstein that really doubled the sample size. You have some more sources that were discovered with, thanks to ROSAT. And as you can see, there's no such increase with the launch of XMM and Chandra. And you had to wait a few years until we get our follow-up of candidates or the very large program survey until we can significantly increase the sample size. So now we can use this and conduct an homogeneous X-ray analysis. We produced the first catalog of spectral parameters of LMC SNRs, and this offers, for instance, a complete sense of supernova remnants with iron K emission or emission from supernova ejecta. So these are important for typing the SNRs. So now I'm going to list results that we get for the subnormal population of the LMC, and those were published in our recent ANA papers. First, an important product of this is the a measurement of the LMC abundance in the interstellar medium probed by supernova remnants. So we found metallicities between 0.2 and 0.5 solars, depending on the elements, as listed here. And if you compare the oxygen to iron ratio, we find a lower value that was measured with ASCA supernova remnants. And this was likely because they had to use integrated spectra of a sample of mostly core collapse supernova remnants, and they were likely contaminated by the oxygen-rich ejecta from core collapse supernova. And so these measurements and our interpretation was recently confirmed with the Chandra study, as they are able to pinpoint the shocked ISM in the very same SNRs that were used in the ASCA sample. On the plot here, I show the oxygen to iron and magnesium to iron ratio as function of metallicities, as measured for various population. We have the SNRs in red, we have all globular cluster in blue, and the rest of the points are LMC red giant stars. And as we go from older population to a younger one, we see the trend of going to higher metallicity and lower alpha to iron ratios, and this reflects the continuous enrichment in iron by type 1A supernova as they explode in the LMC over several giga years. Next, I want to describe how we can use the typing of the remnants to measure the ratio of core collapse to type 1A supernovae that exploded in the LMC. And the problem to do this is that the typing methods are limited to, as you know, the relatively young and bright remnants, and it gets increasingly harder to do that for all the remnants. So we have more than half of the sample of unknown origin. So to improve this, we divide the method to tentatively type all the population based on the local stellar environment. And this is not the first time that types have been assigned to remnants based on the surroundings. Yuwa Chu and Kennicott did that in 1988. But here we take advantage of the availability of resolved stellar population and reconstructed star formation history maps to do this in a more quantitative way. So if we do this and include all the secondary evidence from our spectral analysis, we have a core collapse to type 1A ratio between 1.1 and 1.5. And this can be compared to such measurements using different samples, so from the supernova rates in the local universe, or the value constrained by abundance measurements in galaxy clusters. And you see it's lower, which means an excess of type 1A or supernova in the LMC. So the likely explanation is in the star formation history of the LMC, which had burst of star formation half and 2 giga years ago, and most delayed tide distribution studies of type 1A predict that the majority of the type 1A progenitor will explode within 2 giga years after star formation. So we are incidentally observing the LMC at a time where the type 1A supernova rates from this episode of star formation rates is quite high, driving this lower ratio. Okay, now I want to just show a bit the spatial distribution of the SNRs in the LMC. So I compare that to H1, H2, H-alpha emission, and stars. So we see globally a correlation between site of star formation, like H2 giant H2 region, or the ages of supergiant shell, like LMC4 in the north. And this is where we expect to find the core collapse supernova remnant population. While there's also some loose correlation between high stellar densities, most notably the bar here, or some calm region, like in the outskirts of the galaxy in the south. And this is where we expect to find the type 1A. But better than the 2D distribution, it would be nice to know the position along the line of sight. And we could get a proxy for this by looking at the NH fraction, which is the ratio of the X-ray derived absorption column density toward the source relative to the line of sight integrated H1 column as measured in 21 centimeter observation. And so this gives us the line of sight position of the SNR relative to the main gas disk of the NMC. So here I plot this NH fraction with sources in green meaning in front of the disk, so closer to Earth, and those in red on the far side of the NMC. And we can see that the SNRs in the bar, as labeled here, are almost all in front of the disk, and this supports the findings by stellar distance measurements that the bar is a structure which is offset from the main gas disk and closer to Earth, and here we can directly confirm this with the supernova remnants. While those inserted the radius are on the far side of the NMC And this was also suggested by stellar distance measurements. Okay, now we're going to extend our view to the small Magellan clouds. And because it's smaller than the LMC, then it was covered with XMM a few years ago already. So I point you to these studies for a description of the survey and the resulting point source catalogs. And so admittedly, we have a smaller population known in the SMC, but we have a complete coverage, and so this would be ideal for comparison. Here I mark on this optical line emission the position of the population of supernova remnants in the SMC. So they're mostly concentrated in the SMC bar, and there's only one in the knowns in the SMC wing over there. So we are doing the same kind of analysis as I've shown from the LMC. We are applying the same tools. For example, you can, if you look at the NH fraction, you can see that the SNRs are more in the meat of the SMC, which is thicker along the line of sight than the LMC. Here I show the X-ray images of the sources, showing the variety of morphology and colors. And so we are again producing a catalog of spectral parameters, and I just want to show preliminary results for the ISM abundances of the SMC. We find values about 0.2 solars. So this is a small improvement compared to the value that was cited before, because they could only use 3 SNRs for these measurements. And if you then again look at the oxygen to iron ratio, you find a value which is about almost twice that in LMC. And this could point to the different star formation histories between the two clouds. So we can now try to compare the remnant population of the local group galaxies. So I plot the X-ray limiting function for the SMC and LMC in black and red from this, these studies, and add the M31 and M32 limiting function from the literature. So we see the differences in shape, with the SMC showing a flatter luminosity function than the other galaxies. The spiral galaxies are quite have the same shape as we've heard on Monday. While the LMC show a very complex shape, there's a surprising excess of bright sources, and you can see a significant flattening, which is highly suggestive of incompleteness. And that means we still have many SNRs that can be found, that should be found in the LMC, and they are likely in the region that were not yet covered by XMM. But even if you try to homogenize the sample by scaling the X-ray function by star formation rate, as done here, you can see the differences subsisting for the SMC, which is flatter. And assuming you can correct for incompleteness, then you might have some the same shape from the spiral and the LMC, with still this excess of bright sources. And so these differences can be contrasted by the radial luminosity function, which, as Chomyuk and Wilcott showed, once scaled by the star formation rates, can be quite described quite well by a universal power law. So this is this universal radial luminosity function. And because the radial luminosity functions are controlled by the secreton emission, and they're controlled by the magnetic field strength, and their interpretation was that if you have similar phase for all these remnants, namely the set of phase where they spend the most time, then you can expect this universal luminosity function. And the fact that it's not the case in X-rays might point to a more prominent roles played by metallicity or ISM, or different ISM densities between the galaxy these galaxies. So it will be interesting to add some more galaxies to that sample of sources with a measured X-ray luminosity function. Okay, in this last part of the talk, I'll briefly present you the evolved type 1 SNRs that were found. Borkowski et al. In 2006 found sources with a typical shell of shocked ISM around an X-ray bright core, which is enriched in iron. And we found similar sources in our analysis, in our new data. So those are all like cores that are enriched in X-ray in iron, as you can infer from the X-ray emission spectra. So here you mostly have iron L-chain emission and little else other emission. And then you can measure you can infer the mass of iron from these objects, and you have about 0.5 to 1.5 solar mass, which is the expected type 1A yield. So these kind of sources cannot be observed in the galaxy because they're very soft. And here I plot in this sequence all the known type 1A SNRs in the LMC, sorted by age. And you can identify different sequences if you also combine this with the optical emission for this, from this, the same sources. You have the well-known Young ejector-dominated sources. Then you enter the setup phase. You have some shell of shocked ISM around, but you retain this iron-rich ejecta in the center. And then as you evolve, the shell is slowing down. It's fading out in X-rays. And you can see radiative cooling of the shell traced by oxygen-free lines or some of the lines in the UV. But in this last phase that I want to emphasize, you still have the bright emission in the center from the hot iron, while you have no X-ray shells anymore because it's too cool to emit X-rays anymore. So this new phase is quite interesting. You see the morphology of the cores can be quite asymmetric. And this is my last slide. I just want to point to the question of what is causing this asymmetric morphology of the iron cores. How do they evolve? When do they finally cool down? I just show that the temperature of the X-ray of the iron-rich cores here clusters between 0.6 and 1 kV, and there's little correlation with other parameters. So these objects will be understanding the evolution of these cores will be very interesting, and there will be ideal targets for calorimeters. Sadly, for Itomi, it will not be the case, but for Athena, at least you can. Really resolve in green here is just this all the iron L channel. So this would be ideal target to find new of these sources and understand what is going on in this object. So that's all from me. Thank you for your attention.
Thanks very much, Pierre. We have a time for one question. Maybe two if it's short.
So yesterday, can you hear me? So yesterday we heard about radio emission from supernova remnants in M33. So yesterday we heard about supernova remnants in M33 and a specific model for the evolution of radioluminosity as a function of phase. Here you've defined four phases. And you have remnants assigned to each of those phases. So have you looked at what the radio properties of remnants in each of those phases are?
I've not done that, but for all these sources in the last phase, I don't think there's any detected emission yet. There's some emission on these sources. These, I'm not sure. So it would be interesting to do that, but I don't think for the remaining phases we have a lot of detection yet, so this should await maybe some more, some deeper observation, which I know are underway. So
sorry,
then it would be interesting to see if there's this, if we can really see this, because here we can understand how somehow the different, we know we did some different phases of the evolution.
Okay, thanks. One more question up there.
Hi. I had a question about the core collapse to 1A fraction that you showed.
Yeah.
Okay, so in your work, are you showing the number of core collapse to 1A fraction of remnants or supernova?
Of remnants.
Of remnants, okay.
So we assume this is the ratio of core collapse to type 1A rates in the recent time in the NMC. Not the total one that would explode over an integrated Hubble time, for example.
Okay.
Which is what you find in galaxy clusters. This is given by stellar evolution.
Well, right. So what I was a comment that I wanted to make was that if you're comparing the core collapse to 1A remnant ratio versus the local core collapse to 1A supernova ratio that Lee found, that comparison might be tricky because core collapses in 1As can have different visibility times. So if you have a core collapse and a 1A going off at the same time, then after 50,000 years, depending on the environment, the core collapse may disappear, but the 1A might still be there. So after, you know, 50,000 or 100,000 years, you may have most of the 1As remaining, but the core collapses may have disappeared. So even if you, let's say, start off with, you know, 3:1 ratio of core collapse to 1As, after a long time, you may have more 1As than core collapses. So that might be something to think about if you're wondering why there's more type 1a in the LMC.
Yes, that is true that when you, this comparison is just to show that, of course, also when you compare to supernova rays in the local survey, you're dominated by the star formation history of the galaxy that you probe. But to your point about the visibility time, here actually most of the evidence that we have is based on the, we know on the sample that of definite type, we have a ratio of maybe 1 to 1, we know 12 definite core collapse and 12 definite type 1a, and all the rest of the ratio is measured by doing the comparison with the star formation, the star forming environment around the sources. So there's also some, yeah, I understand the tricky part about the visibility time. Especially since, as I've shown, we can identify some type 1a because apparently they retain this Oortiren course for a very long time, while it's not clear that we can do that for core collapse.
Okay, thanks, Pierre, once again.